Welcome to the ISPNIC Hot Topics Podcast, brought to you by ISPNIC. Each episode will host a short interview with key opinion leaders in PICU or NICU and other fields of medicine. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured hot topic.
Hi, welcome back to the seventh episode of the 2023 ISPNIC Hot Topics Podcast. My name is Janet Mattsson, and I'm a professor of intensive care nursing. And I also work at Karolinska University Hospital at the Children's Department. And together with me today, I have a very interesting person that will tell us a little bit about herself and her topic, transplantations. So welcome, Tova. Please tell us about you.
Thank you so much, Janet. My name is Tova Hannegård-Handin, and I'm a senior consultant at the PICU in Karolinska Hospital, that's the Lindgrens Children's Hospital in Stockholm, Sweden. I've worked there for more than 20 years now and done a lot of the work and clinical work and also academic work dealing with inter-hospital transports of critically ill children. A few years back, I passed my PhD in that subject. So it's something that's very, very interesting, in my opinion, and also very important for the well-being of the children. Sweden is a very, it's not a huge country, but it's a very long country from south to north direction, and people are spread out over the area. So, and we don't have too many PICUs in the country either. We have four. Two are located in the south, one in the middle. Two in the middle, and Stockholm and Uppsala, but not too many in the north. So therefore, it's a big and challenging and very important clinical situation to bring very, very sick children to PICUs in our country. And I think we're not the only country which deals with this kind of a problem, since at least in the Nordic countries, there aren't too many PICUs, and children have to be transported. And then it's very important to look at the quality and the safety of those transports. And that's what I've been working with for many years now.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about the transportations? You transport the children both by helicopter or plane and by car. What do you see as differences, you know, what's in it?
Well, for us, it's we're like a mobile pediatric intensive care unit, really. So we bring everything with us that we are going to need. What we don't have too much of course, electricity. We have no electricity by ourselves. And there is a limited amount of gas, oxygen, and medical air that we can bring. Otherwise, we bring everything. And it doesn't matter really what kind of a vehicle we travel in. That's mostly important of the distance from us to the patient. So if we have a child who is living far away, say like more than 400 kilometers away from us, we usually travel by fixed wing. And if the child lives 70 to 350 kilometers away from us, a helicopter would be the option. And otherwise, we travel by car. And also in Scandinavia, we have to deal with the weather. So for 6 months, it's really, really tricky with the weather. Sometimes when we actually would like to travel by helicopter or plane on a fixed wing, we can't because it's not possible for the pilots to bring us. And then we have to go by car, which of course means very long distances on the road then.
Are there different things you need to think about when you go by air or if you go by car?
Well,
in the care of the child?
No, not really. Of course, if you have someone with a pneumothorax, you know, you have to be careful if you're traveling on up in the air. But on the other hand, the most important thing is that we get to the child as soon as we can. And we spend a lot of time, if needed, stabilizing the child in the referring hospital before we take the decision that we actually are going to travel back. So we really want to be sure about that we have all the things we need in place before we start the journey back to our hospital. So it's very much not like ambulances meeting up with people, you know, in traffic accidents or anything like that, when you really want to get back to the hospital where, as soon as possible. This is different. You spend as much time as you need in the referring hospital before you go back.
And I think that's one of the key aspects of your transportation, right? Is that you really spend time to stabilize the child and to get all your things in order before leaving?
Yeah, that's really mandatory. That's what you have to do. And also, since I can say that around 60% of the children that we transport, we do that because of breathing or respiratory problems. So we travel with the same kind of equipment and monitoring that we have in the PICU, because we really want to be sure that we have a ventilator that is state of the art, to say, and also something that we are very, very familiar with. So we work with these ventilators every day, also in hospital, and therefore we know them so well when we travel with them. And that's also a safety aspect. And meaning that when we come to another more rural hospital, we actually bring in equipment that is more suitable for the patient. So in many, you know, the transport cannot be less than it was in the referral hospital. Preferably, it has to be better than it was in the referral hospital. At least we don't want it to be in any worse situation during the transport itself that it was in the bed that we picked him or her from. So meaning that the entire transport has to be in like an ICU level care-wise.
What about education? How do you educate oneself, or how do you educate your peers to be transport educated?
First, if we start with the intensivist, they are all senior intensivists, meaning that they have had to first be a specialist in pediatric or in intensive care, and secondly, they have had to work in an intensive care unit for children for at least 3 years. And that goes for the nurses as well. They have to be specialized nurses, and then they have had to work in a PICU for 3 years before they can be considered to work in the transport team. Then when someone is joining the team, they work together with their colleague for at least 10 transports. And those 10 transports, they cannot be the same transport, meaning that some of the children will have to be transported in a ventilator, some in a CPAP, and some in a high-frequency oxygen, for example. And the diseases cannot be the same, and the distances cannot be the same. They have to travel by fixed wing together with their colleague. They have to travel by helicopter and also in an ambulance, road ambulance. And then when we've met all those needs, the person starts to work by him or herself together with the nurse or the doctor then. And then we have different educations in different vehicles. So we know how to get out if there is, say, smoke coming out in the cabin in an airplane, for example. And we do simulation every year, loading, unloading, getting out of the airplane. And so the whole team is doing simulation exercises every year. And we've also actually brought the whole simulation team and our team to hospitals that usually refer their patients to our hospital. And we worked with this other adult ICU for 3 days. So new team every day from their part and for our part. Worked together in authentical cases that we've seen through the years, which has been a very, very good thing medically, and also to get to know people that we actually work with during the transports in real life.
So a lot of work on the teamwork then.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the team is it's just two people. It's a doctor, a consultant, a pediatric intensivist, and a nurse from the PICU. So, you know, they have to know each other. They have to work well together. They have to know everything about the equipment, both of them. So it's very, very important to work on the team. And apart from being excellent clinicians, these people also have to be, especially in many other ways, you know, they have to stay calm, even if the situation is terrible. They cannot spread around any kind of worrying feelings to any other people. And they are kind of ambassadors for our hospital, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And all this apart from taking care of the child.
Yeah, that's a lot. Do you have any tests that you can run when you're on the transportation? For example, blood gases or electrolytes or so?
We bring with us an ISTAT, you know, not every time, but if needed, and always on longer journeys. Mm-hmm. And also if the patient is really critically ill, so we know that we have to check it, you know, continuously, more or less. Mm-hmm.
What about the parents? Where are they in all this?
We try, we always offer one parent to come with us on the journey. And I would say that about more than 95% of the parents choose to go with us, one of the parents. Sometimes, especially if we go in our intensive care bus, we can also offer both of them to go with us, to come with us and their child. And many times, both parents travel with us. This can also be done in the helicopter and airplane, depending on what kind of airplane and also helicopter that we go with. So and I think it's really, really valuable that they are brought along. When we started up this transport service many years back, we didn't do it. We didn't take the parents with us. But during the last 10 years, we have. So, and I think it's really important because if the child is awake, if the child is not a baby, but a little bit older, the parent is absolutely, we need the parent, you know, to calm down the child, etc. Of course, if we're transporting a newborn baby who is in a ventilator, the child itself won't be aware of the parent being there or not. But the parent is very much aware of where he or she is. And some parent, you know, they always want to go with us. And also when the child is really, really critically ill and we take them with us. But then, of course, it's also important to inform them beforehand that we do this for your child. And if anything happens, we will be working with your child and you have to do what we tell you to do.
And it works out. You don't have any problem. They are calm, even if it's critical.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, we don't have any problems. And it's they really want to do this, even if, you know, they're afraid of flying. I've had many, many parents who have been afraid of flying, and they do it anyway.
That's powerful. Thank you, Tuva, for your story, telling us here about your excellent work. It's very interesting to follow. Thank you a lot.
Thanks. Thank you.